Good evening and welcome to Peace Talk, a production for KTOO Radio's Focus on Community.
Once some guy went so far to say, try to imagine no heaven, no hell, and no God. No king, no country, not even possessions. We all thought he was asking a lot. So we kept on fighting for all of this stuff, but it never turned out to be reason enough to justify losing people we love. Yeah, that's what we did before the end of war. The end of war.
Peace Talk is a monthly program produced by the Juneau Chapter of Veterans for Peace. It's VFP's contribution to our community's ongoing conversation about war and peace and the important issues and questions they raise in our society and around the world. I'm Rich Moniak. Tonight you'll be hearing from former child soldier Emmanuel Jahl, who is today one of the most active and energizing music voices of the peace movement. This show is part of VFP's effort to promote an essay competition for the John W. Simons Memorial Peace Scholarship, which revolves around music's role in opposing war. It's an annual scholarship that VFP awards to one graduating senior from a high school from any Southeast Alaskan community. This past year, we named the scholarship to honor John Simons, one of our chapter's original members who passed away this past September. Before we get to Jahl tonight, our first music act will be Eric Colville's End of War, a song that earned him several awards. If you've listened to Peace Talk during the past 5 years, you'll recognize the song. It's the theme music you heard at the start of the show. Eric Colville is an award-winning folk rock singer who hails from Boston. His music appears on PBS's Road Trip Nation and ABC's All My Children. He's performed at music festivals alongside many well-known songwriters, including John Oates of Hall & Oates fame, Jeff Black, Sean Mullins, and Jeffrey Steele. His next album is scheduled for release in early 2016. Now here's The End of War, which will be immediately followed by an interview I had with him on the day before Veterans Day, 2 weeks ago.
We used to believe it was all human nature, and there wasn't too much you could do. War is inevitable, that's what they said, and everyone thought it was true. So we blasted away with our bombs and our guns, till the smoke finally cleared and the fighting was done, only to find out that no one had won. Way back in the days before the end of war. They try to imagine no heaven, no hell, and no God. No king, no country, not even possessions. We all thought he was asking a lot. So we kept on fighting for all of this stuff, but it never turned out to be reason enough to justify losing people we love. Yeah, that's what we did before the end of war. The end of trying to explain why nobody saw. Once everyone started to see that the world was much smaller than ever before, and over there wasn't so far anymore. Oh, we did unto others washed up on our shore. The answer is hard to ignore. The end of war. The end of war. The end of war. The end of war. The end of war.
Let me just first say thanks for allowing us to use your music, a piece of your music, for our show's theme for the past 5 years, and thanks for joining us to talk about your song, The End of War.
Thank you, Rich. It's a real honor to be used as a theme song. I don't think I've ever been a theme song for anything, so especially something as worthwhile, in my opinion, as The End of War. So thank you again for that. My pleasure.
So there's a very clear tribute to John Lennon's Imagine in the song, and it not at all obvious is its connection to the Lorax. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, sure. Honestly, as I was sort of playing around with just a couple of guitar chords. I meant to have my guitar here and kind of play it while I was doing it, but I forgot to grab it. Basically, the idea of, you know, I came to the end of war just sort of fit in nicely with those three chords. And then I say, the end of war is over. End of war is over. The end of war is over. The end of war is over. So I kind of kept wrapping around. And, of course, when you say war is over, it's hard not to picture the stark black and white sign that John and Yoko had put up in New York, the billboard, "War is over if you want it," I think it said. "If you want it" was small, but "the war is over" is big. So that sort of sent me along on the idea of the John Lennon idea. And then, you know, once you're thinking about John Lennon in that period, it's also difficult not to think of, you know, Imagine. And, you know, at the time, as you've noted before, I had just watched The Lorax, and sort of the two things sort of came together in that I'm looking at this, you know, John Lennon, the Imagine sort of utopian song. And the problem with the word utopian is it has a connotation of it will never happen. and I certainly didn't want to give that idea. I said, well, also that Imagine is a verb. It's an action word. So if I were saying, what would I imagine here? If I'm imagining the end of war, I'm imagining it, if we're looking back at war as a past tense activity, how interesting would that be? And that tied in nicely with the whole Lorax concept of, I think at the end of it said, unless, is that what it said on the, what did it say on the rock there at the end of the Lorax?
It said something to the effect of, unless you.
That's okay. I think it said unless.
The rock said unless, right, yeah.
Yeah, unless something's done. And the kind of the two came together, and I thought, wow, you know, it's this concept of, you know, and then I'm looking at, I'm seeing this with my, at that time, very young son who actually played with, and I'm making a record with him now. But essentially, I thought of that whole concept, and, you know, someone needs to, you know, we need to do something here. So it was sort of that sort of came together in my mind as to let's just imagine it's in the, you know, we're looking at it and we're looking at it from a future where it's something we used to do. So I felt that made it, in my mind at least, seem possible. I'm not sure I've answered the question as far as the Lorax part of it, is more about pollution in the Lorax, in my opinion. I forget the actual I forget the kind of trees they were cutting down, and I forget exactly what the players were. But the general sense was, at the time I came up with that, I was sort of I'd seen that movie, The War, with Ken Burns and Lynn Novick had put this piece together, and I was kind of watching that in a PBS special at the same time reading The Lorax, and then playing with the song, and it sort of all coalesced as one basic idea there, you know, unless we, do something. And I think the idea really became that there isn't going to be I think I mentioned this in the third verse, there isn't going to be some sweeping of a hand, the law passed in a grand decree. It did seem to me that if everyone just kind of changed their mind on the concept of, as the Veterans of Peace say, as an instrument of national policy, that it would go by the wayside eventually as a concept of something that we would do. And I just feel that's exactly the same thing with the Lorax. He's not speaking to a government leader. He's not speaking to someone who's going to make a decision. He's saying each one of us, unless you do something, it's not going to work out. And I think that's the part where it dovetails with this, the John Lennon idea of from the song Imagine.
So in the song Imagine, I mean, Lennon's considered a dreamer, you know, he considers himself a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. And,
sure.
And how do you feel that portrays yourself as a dreamer, not just in terms of writing this song, but in thinking in the larger context of other issues that you're concerned about?
Well, you know, I do believe, you know, I wouldn't really call it dreaming so much as being a hopeful person. I can think back in the 80s. I remember taking a lot of recycling in a van I had to a recycling outpost to try to help with that. And now, you know, I don't know how it is in Alaska, but I think a lot of communities around the country have curbside recycling. You know, I just take it out, and it's all mixed in one thing, and it goes away. It used to be divided into paper, plastic, you know, metal, all different things. But now that's a possibility, and all this stuff is, in fact, getting recycled. Now, there may be people who say, well, they're not really recycling, just dumping it. But the general feeling is, you know, that idea was just sort of, you know, moving along at a snail's pace. And now I think it's pretty national that people are, in fact, recycling their trash. You know, if you go think about the whole concept of cigarettes. When I was a kid, it was sort of on the fence whether they were bad for you. I mean, everyone knows now they're bad for you. It's you know, whether or not you choose to – I mean, I don't even tell anybody they're bad for them anymore because everybody knows that now. You know, so I believe that in this context, I don't really feel like I'm a dreamer. I think once you have an idea, every idea, no matter how – big it became, started off with a very simple idea that one person or a small group of people had. And if you keep talking about it, it becomes part of the modern vernacular that maybe, hey, maybe war isn't the best idea. Maybe, we're not going to do that. And maybe it's not, the outcomes aren't as good as we thought they were. So, you know, I think you can replace the word dreamer with hopeful. And I think when we begin to believe that it isn't just being a dreamer and it is about having some hope and putting in the work required and talking to people and getting your opinion out there, I think it has the possibility to actually be achieved.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with that. I think more people need to get involved, and I think any call to get involved is important no matter what direction it's coming from. You know, the last verse you have in the song kind of suggests fight them over there so they don't take our war to our country.
Right.
But that also implies that 9/11 was a war arriving on our shores. Do you get any anti-patriotic flack from that for writing that? And if you do, how do you respond to it?
Well, I haven't, not that I know of anyway, regarding the, you know, over there. But I do think that, you know, that very last, that the world was much smaller than ever before and over there wasn't so far anymore, We did unto others washed up on our shores. The answer is hard to ignore. That whole line was, first of all, the over there was making reference to, I believe, a World War One song. That was sort of like a rallying cry. It won't be over till it's over there, or something along those lines. That, you know, we're going to go over there and our boys are going to take care of this thing, and we're going to solve the war. So that over there had a little bit of a double meaning, which I doubt you missed. But I was, in fact, you know, saying, you know, what we did do unto others, a biblical reference, washed up on our shores. I mean, nothing happens in a vacuum. And I think this concept that we can is becoming ever more, the world is much smaller through, you know, Twitter, Facebook, social media, all that sort of thing. Everybody sort of knows what everyone else is doing. So, you know, the United States, or really any industrial country, that if you start doing basically a lot of crap to other people and put them into a very bad situation, you do create. I believe that in some ways terrorism gets created by the actions of states. And, you know, of course not, you know, everything we do is going to generate terrorists. But I think when we are supporting governments that absolutely oppress their people for the profits of a few corporations that are, you know, American or British or you know, some Western countries, corporations, it's not hard for an Osama bin Laden or any of these people to point to us, whether it's true or not. It's not hard for them to point to that we are in fact the cause of this, of these problems they're having, because in some degree they're actually right, you know. So, you know, I do believe that, you know, that last verse was sort of an attempt to bring into this whole, I hate to say it, war on terror, into this whole discussion of the end of war. You know, we can't just look at it as the good old wars of yesterday, where we rolled the tanks out onto Normandy and fought the bad enemy. You know, I mean, it's a lot more difficult, and it's a lot more unclear of who it is we're fighting and what the fighting is actually about today.
Well, let's go back to the first verse. You know, because the war on terror, or the endless wars, we're seem to refer to it, or it seems to have hit us at home now that it is an endless war. You talk about, you know, no one's won these wars. Was that from a frustration about the current situations, or is that the way you view war in general, that no one's ever really won them?
You know, it's most likely born of the current situation, but I do believe, even though we feel that, you know, the wars, World War II, World War One, it's hard to say we won that one, because the conditions that the Versailles Treaty left Germany in, I think, you know, the poverty that we left that country in, and I think in some ways allowed a guy like Hitler to come in and, you know, find a scapegoat in the Western Allies and, you know, point to the traitors of his own country, you know, for abdicating. And in some ways gave rise to World War II. So even though we supposedly won that war, I don't know that leaving it like we left it didn't, in fact, give rise to World War II. And in World War II, you say, well, you know, okay, you know, we won that one, right? But, I mean, you know, what do we do to, you know, to Japan? I mean, we've unleashed atomic energy. You know, the whole concept of nuclear weapons. And, you know, generations of cancer. I mean, you know, you can win it as perhaps a people, but I don't think it's going to resonate very well with your morality as a people, especially if you consider the world as a community. And, you know, it's not just us versus them. You know, they are us and we are them, whether you like it or not. And I think that as the world becomes smaller, that becomes more and more apparent. So I do believe that you don't really win wars. You reach stalemates of whether the wars of attrition or running out of natural resources or whatever it was that stopped the fighting, essentially is going to leave one side or the other in a very bad situation that'll eventually have to be dealt with.
So how old is your son now, and do you share this song with him, you know, in an age-appropriate way? How do you do that?
Well, I've never really been too well. Right now, he's 13, and like I said, we're making a record together, and we're actually we've performed that song together already. But you know, I never really made an effort to be too age appropriate with him. I've always told him sort of the way things really are, and you know, I mean, some people might think that's too much, but I think you know it comes down to your. To your honesty as a parent with your kid. And I've always felt, you know, I mean, I don't obviously try to get into, you know, gratuitous gore of war and, you know, talk too much about that. But I have explained to him that, you know, because he did ask me, you know, what's war? Well, gee, you know, it's kind of, it's sort of a strange thing to have to explain to a kid who has no concept what war is, you know, so it made it a lot, you know, also, kind of went into the whole idea of the song. Wouldn't it be great to be able to explain to him, hey, you know, we used to do this. This is how we used to do things. It didn't work out, and look at all this, and this is what happened, but we don't do that anymore. It would sure be better than saying, yeah, this is what we have done and seem to always do, and hopefully someday we'll get by it all. So, but I've never really made an effort, and I think when I wrote that, he was... you know, 7 or 8. So it wasn't that he was that young.
Have you ever performed it for young school-aged audiences, you know, his classmates in schools or anywhere?
I have actually performed it at the high school. And I told them, I said, you know, it's fine for me to go out there and play this song on my guitar, but it'd be so much better if we could get the orchestra together and your singers together and actually put on a production here and do the song, you know, full up if we possibly can. The music director got right on board with that. They really liked the song. And so we actually did perform it with the entire high school orchestra, which, you know, with only one rehearsal, they did quite well, and it really went over very well. And they were very pleased. And we said, why don't we all wear kind of a, you know, sort of a 60s get up, and everyone sort of came in their flower power, which is very odd to see in kids that were born in the late 80s, but everyone sort of knew what it was about, and they all had it. So it was kind of an interesting and rather colorful show. And I felt quite gratified that that they were all behind it and really liked the idea and supported me as far as, like, rehearsing the kids, putting the project together, and then having me come up and, you know, stand up front and sing the song and lead the song.
I've looked at your website, at your other songs you've written and produced, and the CDs you've done over the years. Well, one of the things that stood out on this broadjam.com site is "The End of War" is the only free song you've got listed. And I mean, I think that says a lot to what it means to you. Do you know how many downloads you've had from that?
I actually don't. In fact, it's funny you mention that, because I am, as of this moment on Facebook, you know, I wrote a little bit about this whole situation of, you know, Veterans Day and, you know, honoring our veterans by having a lasting peace and not, you know, having it flip into a honoring militarism. And I think in some ways it has done that. I'm kind of making I've been putting out a post today, you know, giving people the free download and saying, you know, please share this and let's honor our veterans by ending war. And I've got a free download that I could give you a link for as well, that people could in fact download the song. And yes, it is for free. I didn't really want to make it I might stick it on an album someday, but as far as that song goes, I just really wanted to get out there, and I want people to think about the words and think about, you know, whether it's in fact actually possible, instead of making it just a thing to make money.
So is there anything else you'd like to add, Eric?
I think I would like to tell everybody the link, if you don't mind, for the
No, go ahead. Share anything you like.
It's at www.ericcolvillmusic.com. It's all one word. That's E-R-I-C-C-O-L, V as in vacation, I-L-L-E, music, music.com/download. And I've set it all up so that'll go directly to the page where you download the End of War song. So any of your listeners or anybody would like to get a copy, especially here on Veterans Day, I'd be gratified that they had it.
Well, and I'm going to give you my own little piece. I think I've mentioned to you in our correspondence. I've taken a little bit of your song and turned it into my ringtone. So when my members from Veterans for Peace or the other peace groups I work with call me, that's what I hear.
Right. Well, that's nice. It's in G, just in case you didn't know. That actually is very nice to know, and if only everybody would do the same.
Well, thanks for joining us, Eric, and I really appreciate your song again, and good luck with the other work that you do.
Great. Thank you so much, Rich.
That was Eric Colville. Now it's time to begin tonight's main musical act. The song I'm about to play is excerpted from Emmanuel Jal's War Child, which is also the title of an award-winning feature documentary film and a book about Jal's life.
Survive for a reason to tell my story to touch lives. I believe I've survived for a reason to tell my story to touch lives. All people struggling down there. Storms only come for a while, then after a while, they'll be gone. My father was working for the government as a policeman. A few years later, I heard he joined a rebel movement that was formed to fight for freedom. I didn't understand the politics behind all this because I was only a child. After a while, I saw the tension rising high between the Christian and the Muslim regime. We lost our possessions. My mother's mother suffered depression. And because of this, I was forced to be a war child. For a reason to tell my story to touch lives. I lost my father and mother in this battle. My brothers still perish in this struggle. All my life I've been hiding in the jungle. The pain I'm carrying is too much to handle. Who's there, please, to light up my candle?
This is Peace Talk on KTOO. I'm Rich Moniak. Emmanuel Jal was born in the Sudan 35 years ago. He was one of the thousands of child soldiers conscripted to fight during the country's civil war. He escaped the soldiers' camp and trekked 4 months through Africa, where he was eventually found and adopted by the legendary British aid worker, Emma McCune. His story from ruthless child soldier to refugee to modern-day rap star is even more inspiring than that sounds. He is the founder of the We Want Peace movement to raise awareness on the fundamental principles of justice, equality, and freedom from all through the power of music. And he's the founder of Gwa Africa, a foundation aimed at giving everyone access to education that's underpinned by a philosophy of peace and a dedication to community income generation. Emmanuel Jal has appeared in two other films, including The Good Lie, a drama about the Lost Boys of the Sudan, starring Reese Witherspoon. He's produced 6 solo albums. Last Tuesday, I had the privilege of speaking with him via Skype from my home. Before we talk about your life and music a little bit, do you have anything you'd like to say? I mean, last week was a very difficult week for a lot of people with the terrorist attacks in Beirut and in Paris. I know that affects your work tremendously.
Well, you know, a lot of things are happening around the world. One thing I know is most human beings come to this world, they have no hate in them, but just so much love and wanting to know what is around them. But fear comes and takes over when we don't know one another. What I look at it is, no human being for no reason would just go and hurt another human being and feel good about it. The way I look at it, I see
what happened in France is really disgusting, you know? You know, on this side, where we are, we're really saying it's terrifying. But the people who blew those buildings to themselves, when the kids from their home sees what happened, they get inspired. They feel they have done something great. You know, I'm just trying to be on the both side of the context. So if we have a situation like that, then what are the people on this side doing to those people on that side that they feel so bad to actually come to this side and do this? You know, so now there's rumors now, everybody wanna go to war. But my question is, what will actually win ISIS is not bullets and guns and bombs. I think what will win them is love, you know. Everybody wants peace, you know.
Yeah. And I think the reaction to go to war is so eerily similar to what happened after September 11th, 14 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's worrisome. So 2 weeks ago, you performed on a tour with Xavier Rudd and the United Nations. I think you toured 6 Eastern Canadian cities.
Yes, yes.
And like you, his message is about bringing people together for a cause that's larger than yourselves. What was it like performing together with him?
I mean, like, I've never been in a tour like that before to see somebody who's so dedicated for peace, you know? Even the rituals that he does, how he works with his band together, you know, to small connecting the spirit of the ancestors. I mean, the guy has gone so far, you know. And I mean, look, I really enjoyed the tour. It was like, I think it was a great tour. Everything, all our messaging was together, me opening up for him, and the crowd was loving what I was doing. And when he come to perform, the stage is ready for him. One thing that happened is our tour was a tour of a purpose. So we end up getting 103 kids sponsored. You know, we found like 103 kids got sponsored to go to school. So just basically by engaging our fans to be part of this global movement of giving a child opportunity.
Sending kids to school, this comes from your group that you founded, is GUA Africa?
No, what we actually do is World Vision. So sometimes I do stuff through my charity, but what I like to do is I like to partner with others, you know, because mostly I do school tours where I go and share my experience in schools and colleges, universities. And sometimes there are different people I can partner with, you know, because when I look at the way our world is now, is nobody's able to do something by themselves. We have to work together. The people who are doing around the world don't know how to work together to do good. But the guys who are doing bad stuff, who are more self-interested about themselves and creating a lot of havoc to our climate, knows how to work together because their life relies on it. So in this toy was an example, you know, we have World Vision working with us, and then Xavier decided to pick out of all artists that was presented to him. He said, I want Emmanuel to come on my tour, which was really humbling for me to hear something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. And you're a successful pop musician in your own right, and you've been a film actor. You're also, as we've been talking, a humanitarian with multiple causes. And your passion comes from your own life experience. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, being a child soldier and how you escaped that world to come into the world of music that you're now, music and activism that you're now part of?
Well, being a child soldier was because of what happened to my home. So experiencing a war that takes the soul of your village, you know, all my aunties died in the war. You know, my mother too was claimed by the war. My aunties too died during the war. My uncles died during the war except two. And so if you look at it, you know, all these things accumulated. You know, I lost my childhood. I became a child soldier. The different ways, different things that happened during the war that a lot of people don't get to see, you know. People in war, some died of starvation, some died of dehydration. Some people get poisoned because of wells. Some run and die out of exhaustion. You know, some people just die or get confused and lose their mind. Some commit suicide, you know. But there's the other thing that a lot of people forget is there's the internal injuries that take a lifetime to heal, those side effects. So I became a child soldier because I was angry. I wanted to revenge for my family. I want to know who destroyed my home. How can I bring justice to this? You know, there was a feeling inside that I couldn't explain, but that feeling of anger. And that's what actually helped me finish training. Because I would have not finished the training properly. I wanted to escape. It was difficult. Kids were dying through the training. And so when I finally finished the training and I became a child soldier, then going to the battles and be able and was able to try to see either to revenge, or maybe I call it that way. That was 5-minute pleasure. Then after that, you get torments that takes lifetime. You know, life as a child soldier is hell. You know, so being in a war torn, being a refugee, when you survive, it's like you're running through fire. You're burning because everything is constantly coming toward you. And so all these kids, seeing 6, 7 years old, burying their own dead, that was the situation I was in. We have to make our own prayers. And being in a situation where either you're in bunkers or you're getting bombed every day, you can't move many places, you see so many people who have been wounded by the war, crying, there's no, those medicines, you know, like to keep the pain away, or there are no doctors, somebody's leg, you know, are rotten for a while because we didn't have the proper medicine places. So all those disgusting, being a place where you actually lose appetite to eat. Sometimes you eat and your food smells like gunpowder. And so it's not a place for a child to be. You know, a child place is supposed to be school with their family, you know, getting loved and getting to learn about the world. So I look at it like sometimes even I'm here, I feel like a kid who raised themselves, or a kid that was raised by a gun, you know, no proper boundary, you know, and I'm here now today. But I would just say I'm lucky, you know, I made it this far, and I got rescued by a British aid worker called Emma McCune, who happened to have helped about 50 child soldiers. But I made her at a point which I would consider as the lowest point I've ever been as a human being, because I was tempted one time to eat my comrade when we ran out of food. But I end up surviving from a group of young people between 200 to 400 people, and only 16 people managed to survive that journey.
Music became a therapy, you've said, and that's obviously grown quite a bit, and it's mixed with your activism. Do you think your music's grown because you're an activist, or has your activism grown because of your music? Do they both just feed each other?
Well, music, I was doing music because it's the place that I was able to become a child again. This is the place I was able to see heaven. It gave me that moment to engage me in my mind to find that therapy. This is where I got my therapy. I didn't see a specialist to go and talk to and tell them, hey, these are the nightmares, these are the dreams, these are the things that happen, you know. You know, because after the war, you know, you got the internal injuries that follow you. You got the ghosts that follow you. You got at night and all of those things. And I had to find a way to deal and cope with them, you know. And through music, also telling my story make me upset and make me sad. But in the sense of finding a purpose and combining it with the music to engage me, I am free as I tell my story now.
And you've got this organization that I mentioned earlier, is GUA Africa?
Well, Jive Africa, Gwa Africa is
Gwa Africa.
It's a charity I found that I use to, for anybody who want to give a child opportunity or want to sponsor a refugee or want to invest in South Sudan through education, then they come to Gwa Africa. And they will sponsor a child, they have their contact, or sponsor a teenager or a young man who want to finish their university. And so it's more to provide scholarships. So it's a people making it work. And so that organization got visibility because I became engaged in my work and people get to know me. And my activism has been expanded by the words I talk, by standing out, by sharing my experience, by music. So everything worked together, you know. And I have the platform I use for sharing my experiences. It's called We Want Peace. And We Want Peace is the movement, you know, to create conscious awakening. And by using stories. So what I use here is I share my experiences for social, emotional learning. Because I believe if we share our stories for social, emotional learning, then we are able to put a spotlight in a dark place that make evil perform less. And so, and the storytelling has got a tremendous way of affecting human mind and also inspiring them or painting pictures and touching their hearts so they could empathize. And so I use stories for We Want Peace movement, where I believe peace is justice, equality, and freedom for all. Peace is when my belly is full. Peace is opportunities. Peace is conflict management, when conflicts are managed in a mature manner, that the violence is prevented. That's what I call peace. And so, and that's the messaging. And as time goes on, I keep evolving, you know, and trying to find ways. I don't want to remain as this same victim. You know, I'm now like 35, soon I'm going to be 36. And recently, you know, even though one of the latest things that I'm passionate about now is eating well, is food, you know, because I've been on road for a long time and I started having high blood pressure. I started getting all the symptoms of diabetes. I would collapse in a hotel, then the doctors come and inject me with stuff, give me painkillers on the road. Then I start saying, wait a minute, I have a purpose. I am happy inside me. Actually, I'm happy. But my body keep crushing me down. So what is it? And so I started trying to see, I want to get peace into my body. I want to find out, what is this thing? Is there a solution? And so I found out food, I wasn't eating well, you know, and that's why I was able to get this kind of sickness setback, pulling me back. And so part of the thing that I'm pushing on, apart from being activists, I realized, look, good people die early, you know. A lot of people get sick just because they're not eating right. And now that's when I was able to form my own food. So I made my own foods when I'm on road that I eat. So now I created a different type of food called Jalgwa. So there's a company I formed now called Jalgwa, which is a health food company. Anybody can check it, www.jalgwa.com. And so combining sorghum and moringa, and sorghum is a grain that when I was checking online, it on top order food, it has like over 240,000 antioxidants for 100 grams you eat. And it's our staple food where I come from. It has vitamin and minerals. And then I combine it with moringa, which got vitamins and minerals as well. And it's known as the tree of life. So these two, I brought it together. And throughout my processing, I used to make smoothies. And in that process, I was able to treat myself, or possible I would call it cure myself from these diseases that I thought I was having. And now I'm passionate about it again, and that's why I formed that company. And anybody can check it out. And so that's one of the latest things that I do, you know. So I'm into food now. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's admirable. I mean, everything that you've done, you know, a lot of musicians, you know, they find fame and fortune and they become all about themselves, and you continue to keep giving and growing, and it's an amazing story. How often do you try to, or are you able to get back home to the Sudan?
At the moment, the country's at war again, and it's terribly sad to even think about it now, because recently the government lied that there was a coup, and then because of fear, you know, end up rounding a specific ethnic group, and they kill like 20,000 civilians in the city, and the family members of those people decided to fight the government back, so the country is in civil war. And now 60 people from my family members, as my sister told me, like people who are close relative to us, including my two brothers and sister and a stepmom, got killed in a cold blood by the government. And so if I look at it now, and also how my government labeled me, they called me a rebel, you know. So even when I first went there, I went and did a peace concert, I was beaten almost to death, and I was warned, like, we don't like activists here, you know. If you come here, keep your mouth shut. Whatever you see, don't talk about it. And if you talk about it, we're going to remove your eyes, and we're going to put you in a bag, throw you in the Nile. So basically, they're threatening to kill me. And so that's why now I'm in Canada. I can't go back to my country, but I can make an impact using a different way, through Go Africa, charity, finding opportunities for people. You know, and when time is right, when I'm not worth killing, I'll go back there.
Well, there's a great service you're doing to people in Canada and the United States. I mean, we have it so easy here. Living easy makes it easy to tune out from the world's problems. What would you explain to a high school student today that, what reason would you give them for saying, you must get involved in the world and help end these wars?
Well, what I can say to the high school student is, you're going to inherit these problems, you know, and the best way to do it, now you're in school, that's the best place to exercise solving problems. When you're given a homework, solve that problem, you know, and by solving problems, you're going to put yourself in a bigger position to answer certain things. And look at yourself like solving problems will eventually make you a leader. If you look at how our world is now, you're as valuable as a problem that you can solve. If you can't solve any problem, you have no value. You know, the system is looking for people who can solve problems. The system has our conscience as human beings. I was looking for a savior, a messiah, somebody who's going to come and solve this problem, take them away. That's how we look. We're looking for that one hero. And that hero could be that student in school now. You could be the next prime minister of a country, or a president, or the next senator, or you could be the next business tycoon. You could be the next big thing. But now you're in school, that's the perfect place to solve those problems. But that doesn't mean you can't participate in global issues. You know, now the world has become small, and they have a greater responsibility because they have opportunities, you know. And opening your ears, learning more, would help you to make this world a better place. In the process, you'll discover a purpose, because a lot of people want to make money. You want to live a nice life. Then after that, then what is next, you know? You know, after you made all the money, you could buy everything you want on this planet. But life will become disgusting when you don't have a purpose. Because the planet gives to all of us. And energy from the planet that is inverted in somebody is the same. What the planet wants, or Mother Earth wants, is it wants you to give back. It wants you to surrender everything that it has given you. And that's what I call that is, I call it purpose. Because a purpose is unconditional giving, self-sacrifice to a greater cause bigger than you. And that's what the purpose is. Because when the reward you get is, you get joy, constant joy. You wake up every morning. You know, purpose can wake you up at 3 a.m. and you still walk home and you're still fine. You see, that's the concept I want. If you don't have a purpose as a student in school, try to find it now. If you can't find a purpose, meditate, go to your conscience, and it will show you. It's that inner calling, that one thing, that voice that called you to do a specific thing. You know, it could be you care about wild animals, you know. You care about the fish in the ocean that no voice is speaking for them, you know. And that could be your sense of purpose. There's difference between looking for money, looking for job. But when you're in a place with this purpose that you serve that greater cause that is bigger than you, then you have actually surrendered yourself, because that is something you're willing to die for.
Well, that's wise thinking for our students today. And we'll have this available to them to listen to again as they think about writing for our essay for the scholarship, which you're helping us invite them to do. And I very, very much appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Emmanuel. Would you have anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
Well, I've never been into Alaska, but hopefully I could come for a school tour there, because I do school tours all the time. So I normally go to school, do 10 schools, just perform music and talk, share my experiences there.
Well, let's talk about that, because I would love to bring you up to Alaska, because I think you've got a voice that can really reach into young people much, much deeper than lots of people that we've had here.
Fantastic. I think we'll make it happen. You're in contact with Carrie, so we'll give you materials and let's see what happens. So possibly some of the schools that are going to win, I could come there, you know?
Definitely, most definitely. If we could do it, we will.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and keep up your wonderful work. And I will, like I say, share it with more and more people. It's an amazing story, and it continues to grow into a more amazing story. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I think for the young people out there, what they should know is there's more good in this world than evil. You know, there's so much good. If we only think for a minute to see what is around us, you know, goodness is all around us. But sometimes we give attention, so much attention, to that little bad thing, and we make it look so big. If we can only focus on us and see the goodness that is more in us than the little mistakes that we see in each other, then I think we're going to be in a better place.
Let's hope so. Thank you again.
Thank you.
That was rap singer, songwriter, and peace activist Emmanuel Jal speaking with me last week. Here are some of his websites worth checking out. His official music site is emmanueljal.com. Emmanuel-Jal.webs.com is a link to the homepage for his Never Give Up, Never Give In movie and song titled War Child. GUA-Africa.org is the site to GUA Africa, his foundation dedicated to educating all youth in a philosophy of peace and a focus on community income generation. You can also look up his TED Talk on TED.com, which includes a live performance of Emma, his song dedicated to the late Emma McCune, the legendary British aid worker who adopted him and gave us the chance to learn from his tremendous journey through life. And last of all, WeWantPeace.org. We Want Peace is his movement to raise awareness on the fundamental principles of justice, equality, and freedom for all through the power of music. There you'll find a video of the song We Want Peace that includes, at the end, President Jimmy Carter, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and others contributing the simple words, We Want Peace. And as one last thought before I play We Want Peace, I hope you'll all agree with me that we should find the resources needed to bring Emmanuel Jal to Juneau and to all of Alaska, so the students in our schools can be inspired by his powerful story and to join him by screaming and shouting, We want peace.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I'm looking for some people who's looking for peace. Maybe together we could make the war cease. Now we can send mankind to the moon, and we can reach to the bottom of the sea. That's why it really kind of baffles me that we cannot end wars and bring peace. And we cannot change the way people act, and we cannot change the way people think. So if we sit back, chill out and relax, civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on, people, would you help me? I wish the world was a little bit better. Time to start looking at the man in the mirror. Fear is the devil policeman. Fear make good genocide with Hitler so he can. Feel a wolf genocide and I'm a good weekend. Signing up the land cause nobody was speaking. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on people, would you help me? For the poor people living and die for the world gone down, the world gone blind, the world people sitting down on the behind. Nobody cared about the poor and needy. Too busy sucking up through the rich and the greedy. For every hero there's a villain. I am feeling we've got to stop sending our own sin. One more time, we got no more time. We've got to figure out the way that we can all combine. Hey. Like there's of the work and stumbling down. The sound of voices out of cities surround. You know what it's worth.
I'd like to thank Tanya Campbell-Golding, Emmanuel Giles' manager who helped arrange my interview with him, and a special thanks to Eric Colville and, of course, to Emmanuel Giles for speaking with us on Peace Talk. This is KTOO in Juneau. I'm Rich Moniak. Have a good night.